Maybe not 1 minute. I don't want to share all my time with you, but stand up for a minute, stretch, and think about in your home or on your current phone a picture that you have, a favorite picture of yours. And if you would, turn to your neighbor. Do you feel like you're in a small Minnesota Lutheran church? Turn to your neighbor and describe briefly the picture and why it's meaningful to you. Go. Once you've shared, please go ahead and take a seat. I'll know you're done, or we'll be going for a while. That's right. That's right, I'll talk fast. All right, so thank you for doing that. I think it will get the blood flowing just a very little bit for this end of the day. I hope by the end of my time with you that you will walk away confidently being able to describe to others what Photo Voice is and definitely what Photo Voice is not. How many in the room have used Photo Voice or tried to use it? Okay? And if you noticed in the program and went word for word, you saw there were probably close to 20 titles that had the term photo voice or video voice in it. So certainly it's growing in popularity. It's a good tool. It's a good resource when it's done right. But let's make sure we all know what we're talking about, what it is, what it isn't, and some of the different ways in which you might use photo voice in your practice, in your research, and as well in your education. We are here because we're public health professionals, we're nurses, we're educators, we're researchers. We care about the health of populations. We care about doing something that makes a difference. We think about meeting objectives, meeting benchmarks, exceeding them in the case of Healthy People 2020 or in the United States. And then globally, we might think about Millennium Development Goals by 2015, right? We are here because we want to make a difference. There are things in our lives and in the world that certainly can inhibit the things we're trying to do. And I list a few of those for you here. I'm sure there are more, and you could add to this list. One of the issues we have is that the communities we are trying to serve often don't get their voices heard. So my summary of the problem is that we have, on the one hand, the vulnerable, the uninsured, the under-resourced, those living in food deserts. Take any example that you want. We're trying to put programs on them, put interventions on them, do something for them. That's driven by a legislative level, by a budgetary level, by decision makers who aren't necessarily in touch with those vulnerable. Some of us are, as providers and practitioners, but many folks are not. So how can we bring those two together? There are many tools out there probably, and this session has identified quite a few actually with respect to collaboration and partnership. So Photo Voice is one tool, but of course there are many that we could talk about and spend a lot of time describing. Fundamentally, Photo Voice is a process. It's a process that will give voice to a group of folks who traditionally haven't had a voice. Does anyone know who coined the phrase photo voice? It was first published in the literature by Caroline Wang. She was a faculty member up at Michigan. She's not currently there. I'm not sure where. W-A-N-G. She was in Flint, and what she wanted to do was get community members' voices heard regarding the natural environment, physical, social environment, the community in which these folks were living. She did a photo voice group, a project with youth. The youth did the project, their parents, adults, did a photo voice project, and the legislators did a photo voice project, went out, took pictures of their community, and gave meaning to those pictures. When they did the photo voice exhibit and brought all three groups together, you can imagine, as well as I, and you can read her article about it, the youth's perspective and the photos they took were quite different from the more glossy, nice, polished ones. Not nice in terms of artistic, but the legislators were more likely to point out what they saw as good about the community. The youth brought a real raw honesty. What were the issues? What were the problems? The worries, the fears, the violence, those things. So you can see, as a very tangible example, Caroline Wang was really driving this idea of getting all the voices at an equal playing field level in the same room, in the same environment. She was informed by feminist theory, certainly by Paulo Freire, and as well has quite a few, a lot of the underpinnings are community-based participatory approaches, participatory action research, and for those kind of resources, you would go to the obvious. Barbara Israel, Minkler, Wallerstein, some of those would provide some nice core resources for you. So photo voice, in a summary, we are trying to engage and empower individuals, strengthen community participation in policy and advocacy efforts, and a key to photo voice is that there is a drive to a policy change. This is fundamental. You will hear a lot of folks describe their photo voice project. It's beautiful, it's nice, it's descriptive, it has no linkage to policy change. That's not photo voice the way Caroline Wang intended it to be. Okay? I'm not saying you've done something wrong if you've done it and you didn't have that policy link. You probably had it, you maybe didn't go deep enough to find it and to make the connection. Your participants won't always make the connection. That's why you have a facilitator, someone from the community engaging at that facilitating level, particularly for youth. You need a policy change for this to really be photo voice. Otherwise, call it photo documentary, call it photo narrative, call it something else, but it's not photo voice. Another key piece to this, I've completely just lost my train of thought, so sorry about that. Let me think for a minute because it was an important point. I'll come back to it. So photo voice has been used in along a continuum from the individual level to the advocacy level. Oh, here's my point. So it will always come back eventually, right? I'm older than I look. Okay. So at the school level, you can have a group of youth do a photo voice project, and they're driving a change in their school. That can be a policy change. It's a decision change. It does not have to be a federal level policy change. Bring policy down to any grassroots level, it can be called policy. And I think this is important because some people become extremely overwhelmed thinking that they need to change some enormous state level policy. They don't. Just bring it to the level that matters for whatever that community issue is and what folks care about. At the individual level, an example of using photo voice would be in a public health nursing home visiting context. I've had nurses use photo voice, ask their new teen parents to take pictures of themselves interacting with their babies with the cameras on the phones that they all have. Between visits, they're taking these pictures. At their visits, they're talking about these pictures. Now, this example I'm giving you does not have an obvious policy implication unless that nurse takes those data and takes that information and works with her group of patients or folks that she's working with, and then as a collective, they might make a recommendation with respect to the frequency of nurse visits or the types of things they're doing on their visits. You need to make the link to policy, but I'm giving you an example at the individual level because that's what happens. More often, and the more powerful use of photo voice is at the system level, at the far end of my slide on the right, where you are doing community building, capacity building, and advocacy work. Commonly in the literature, you will find folks describing the use of photo voice to do needs assessments. Very, very common. That's fine. It's probably informing good work that will lead to a change of some kind I'm just giving you an example here. And this slide comes out of work that Bob Strack does. He's another photo voice researcher out at North Carolina. He just received a grant to do an online national photo voice effort whereby youth would, in their communities, do a photo voice group, upload their photos, all of it around the topic of substance use and prevention. So nationally, you might end up with this amazing website of photos from all over the U.S. We'll see if it happens and where it goes, but I know he's kicking that off the ground. I threw a slide in here, and you can access these, of course, later. Email me, ask me, but I want to differentiate photo voice groups from focus groups. Most often, photo voice projects will occur in a group context, in a facilitated group setting, and the rest of my slides will give you some examples of the projects we've done. It is different from a focus group, and I outline some of these examples here. The primary data source as an example, the photos and a participant standing up there just like you did very briefly, I took this picture because, or this picture matters to me because. It is not me, the qualitative researcher, poring over transcripts and assigning codes, categories, and coming up with themes. It is the participants themselves doing that work. I'll show examples. So implementing photo voice as a group process, it is similar to other groups you would do. I'm giving you slides in a 15-minute talk that I could stretch out in my facilitator trainings. They can last 2 days. I give overviews in about 3 hours. So I'm giving you a lot because I know you can take it in and digest it and then go to the literature and solve the rest of your questions or email me. So similar to other groups, you need to address all of these logistics. How long are you going to meet? What are you going to do? In the literature, you will see folks who have done one time with people and called it a photo voice project. I struggle with this because one of the beautiful pieces of photo voice is bringing together a group, 8 to 10, 12 people, over a series of sessions. They build a bond that is very unique and powerful. Youth, I've done photo voice groups with youth. I've done most of my work with adolescents and their parents coming together as a group. There are things that happen in those groups over time that are not just about the policy goal at the end. There are relational strengthenings that happen. Some of the Latino mothers we've worked with at the end of their 8 sessions have been in tears because this was their only social outlet and they want to keep meeting. And some of you that have done groups, other kinds of health promotion groups, you know this occurs. So just know about it and know that with photo voice, I think I struggle if you think you're going to pull off a real effective, strong, collective, cohesive community voice in one or two sessions of taking photos. But they do happen. You'll see it in the literature. Decisions around facilitator selection. My only point here with this slide is to point out it makes a very big difference, and it's really important who you select to facilitate your groups. You know this is true for those of you that do group work. Insider, outsider, is the person of the same ethnicity? Are they an original speaker of that language? All of these things are really important to consider. And I've done my groups a lot of different ways. I've had groups with Latino participants where the facilitator was myself and a Latino. I've done the groups where I've had two Latinos do it. Key points for me to share with you would be when I have adults and adolescents, having a young adult co-facilitator really engages my youth. When I have targeted males, bringing in the boys, I started my groups with girls, and the dads at the exhibit would say, I want to do that with my daughter, or they would say, I want to do this with my son. And the moms would say, I need my son to come to a group like this. We didn't know if we'd get them to show up. We did. But having a male facilitator was really important when we were engaging the males. So here's an example of a few facilitators in some of the projects that we've done. A beautiful story here. We had a Mexican girl participate in a group in Minnesota. Then, a couple years later, she served as a facilitator of a group we did in Mexico in her hometown. So it's a nice example for me of leadership development. An example of a template of sessions, in this case, in common in the literature, you'll see an average of about 8 sessions, giving folks time to meet, to greet, get to know each other, get comfortable with each other, comfortable with using cameras, doing sessions where they're actually bringing their photos back, sharing, building their common themes, what are their core messages to the community, to their stakeholders, and then building that exhibit, which can be electronic, it can be in paper, it can be framed up on the wall. SHOWT is an example of what you can do as a tool when you have your participants. Well, how do you get them to talk? Some folks will stand up there and you give them an opportunity and they have their picture and they will talk a long time. Others need a tool. This is a tool. They will answer these questions. What I see here and why I took this picture is this. This is what's happening. This is how it relates to my life. They walk through the questions. Another example for folks who don't want to talk, you can take their picture, tape it to a piece of paper, print out this template, have them write what they meant. Address literacy, of course, and be aware of that for some of the groups you're working with. They're not going to want to write. They're going to prefer to talk. You just need to know who you're working with. But there are different tools you can use to get the same point across. Symbolic interactionism is a theoretical idea. Some of you are familiar with this. It matters what that person thinks, why they took that picture. I had a youth take a picture overlooking a freeway, and it was really cloudy. I took that picture when it was developed. I looked at it, and I said, that is all about the pollution in Minneapolis and the Twin Cities. His interpretation was this. Look how clear it is. I can see those cars on that road. If I were in Mexico City, I could never see them. Complete opposite. Symbolic interactionism is huge. Here's an example of some of our weekly sessions. The girls working over their photos, their mothers working with them, organizing their photos into themes. In this case, it was a paper exhibit. The participants invite who they want. They invite legislators. Often we help them because they don't know how to access those people. They invite family, friends, community members. They create their invitations, and they bring them out and spread the word. An example here about a slide in here, I'm throwing it in simply to point out that you need to think about ethics. Okay. Examples from Mexico and the United States. We did groups in both contexts. We were in a receiving community that was receiving newly immigrated Latino families. We went to the sending community in Mexico where we have common in Morelos. And we did photo voice in both contexts trying to get at what migration was meaning for them, for those who stayed, for those who came, and how is that influencing the parent-adolescent relationship. In Minnesota, they talked about nostalgia, missing home. A 15-year-old girl took this picture of mangoes, and said, I took this picture because it shows you will import our fruit, but you don't want us here. This was around the time that we were having a lot of the issues with immigration reform. In Mexico, they didn't talk about nostalgia. They talked about feeling abandoned. So there were some very interesting parallel themes that occurred in this particular project. Taking pictures of McDonald's and then showing their homemade tortas and contrasting what I would much prefer would be the torta. Then we took those themes and we linked them to policy. We guided those discussions, but it was the group who told us, this is what we think we want to do about what we've told you. Don't stop at, oh, this is interesting, powerful, sad stories. They'll drive the emotions of some legislators, but you need the linkage to the actual policies. We celebrate with an exhibit. The exhibits all look different. The Mexico community on the bottom right, they had over 200, 300 people in a community of about 3,000 show up. Really beautiful. Celebrate completion. How is this relevant to public health nursing or to public health in general? I think the intervention wheel is beautiful because it can show a lot of what we do as public health nurses. For those of you who are nurses in the room, those of you who aren't, you can still make the linkage. We all do all of these things in public health all the time. There are so many ways we can use photo voice and use this as a tool to advocate and to bring the voices of the communities that we're working with to the legislative level, to the policy change level. There's a lot more that I could say, but it gives you a taste of the tool and a real taste of the potential for it. I've worked with folks who did this with girls on probation in our county. I consulted with Wisconsin. They did this on some of the reservations addressing substance use. And in all of these projects, the feedback is always positive, very impactful. We want to do more of this. I've gone to a point now where we're training trainers. So in the community, we have folks who can take these ideas, implement groups on their own. We're there as resources, but they can do it. And that's our goal, right, that we give these tools to the hands of the people that really can use it. My next project will be actually bringing this to folks in Tanzania, working with nursing students, veterinarian students, and going out and talking with communities about risk of zoonotic disease and the spread. So very interesting. Think far and wide. Use it. Try it. Let me know how it works. Thank you.
Photos are ever used in the exhibit or used in presentations like this. conduct your typical mandated reporting on issues. Also, the discussion that if any photograph were to include illegal behavior or any indication of violence or abuse, that that will require that will fall under the mandated reporting. So it's really about educating the youth. I've had hundreds of photos, and never have I been put in a situation where I've had to act on one because of abuse. Now, I will see name signs sometimes, fake substance use, those kind of things you feel on an individual basis. Those are the key IRB issues that they're going to worry about. The other is safety. So youth want to go out and take a picture of a drug deal going down, you know, they want to go get in the action. And it's our job to educate them about how to take a picture that makes their point in a safe way. So for example, you know that neighborhood park is where they deal. Go in the day when they're not there, take the picture, tell the story. It's just as powerful as you have to be at risk. I don't have those tips written up per se, but they are the kind of things that IRB will ask about.
And photos of other people.
So photos of other people, that's handled a few different ways. So verbal consent, education that in a public place, just like if you were a journalist, if you're in a public place, there's implied consent. But I'll tell you, don't be stupid, don't get in front of someone's face, and if you do, ask permission. Some projects, they'll give the youth a pile of consent forms and ask them to have the person sign if they're willing for that photo to use, because it could show up in an exhibit in the community. So there are those kind of resources available. And I have examples and templates. Definitely, yeah.